What's up, folks? Welcome to episode 4 of the Adjacent Hacks podcast. My name is Zach, and joining me again, as with every single month, is my buddy Doug. How's it going, man? What did you think of some of the new releases from Gen Con?
I am really excited about a handful of the games from Gen Con. I wish I could have gone and tried them. We've mentioned Plaid Hat Games on the podcast before, and how they are one of our favorite publishers. And they coming out with Ashes, Rise of the Phoenixborn.
Oh, I saw that. That one looks really sweet.
It's kind of magic-y, Android Netrunner-y, like two mages. But it's interesting because it's got dice rolling, and then depending on how they come up, you can use those dice to cast your spells, use your powers, summon creatures, whatever. So it's a little bit different than those other games. And I love the artwork, and I've watched a game or two being played on YouTube.
Oh, absolutely. David Richards is one of the artists on that game, and I recognize his name. He did Dead of Winter.
Oh, did he? Okay.
Which was one of our favorites. He did Mice and Mystics.
So he's a regular for them.
He is a regular for the company. His artwork is just fantastic.
Oh, I love
it. The stylization in this game is really, really looking cool. So I'm excited to see what that looks like when it finally comes out.
Yeah, me too. I'm also jumping on the Mysterium bandwagon.
Oh, yeah?
You know, everybody wants to play that game. And apparently everybody in the world has, but America... Because there's like 5 different versions depending on which European country you live in. But it's finally coming out over here.
Oh, yeah. This one looks really good, too.
Yeah. Have you seen anything about that?
No, but I know it is a deduction sort of murder investigation sort
of
game.
Yeah, well, one player plays a ghost and everybody else plays psychics. They have, I don't know why, 7 days. Probably just because the game has to end. But they have 7 days to... figure out what happened to the ghost, and the ghost is trying to, apparently he was murdered years ago or something like that, and he's just trying to point out. So you're like trying to find a suspect, a murder weapon, and a room in a totally not Clue-esque way.
Huh. Yeah,
it gets compared to Dixit a lot.
Okay.
Just with the artwork and stuff, but the gameplay is much different, I think.
Yeah,
but it's very popular, and it's finally coming over here. I guess it sold like crazy at Gen Con.
Well, that's good to hear. I'm excited to see that one as well.
Yeah. I wish I could have been there to try these out, because there were so many good games.
At the same time, though, I'm quite glad that we didn't have to stand through the lines.
Yeah, that's true. And, you know, patience being a virtue, I can wait for my stuff to show up on shelves. I don't need to be the first to have it.
Absolutely, unlike some gamers we play with.
How about you? Anything from Gen Con?
Nothing really jumps off the page at me. Not that I'm not excited about things, but more that I just made a couple of interesting observations about Gen Con.
Mm.
My first, game companies have started buying up all sorts of comic book properties,
mm-hmm.
Basically ever since X-Men hit it big at the box office. So we're seeing a lot of trademarked characters in all sorts of media, and now we're starting to see it in board gaming as well. Specifically, I'm thinking of Legendary Encounters. I believe the new one is a Predator-based
Predator
expansion.
Encounters.
And
yeah.
I'm not sure if that's a good thing or a bad thing, honestly. I like the idea, but I think it may be going a little bit too far.
Well, I think it depends, because I think a lot of board games had a history of licensed board games were kind of terrible. That was just the accepted norm.
Mm-hmm.
And then a few games came along. Firefly, actually, the game being one of them. That kind of showed you could take a real property and make it into a decent, fun, playable game that wasn't a rolling move from Milton Bradley.
Absolutely. And I think my fundamental quibble with the Legendary system is its depth extends way beyond one property. For example, Gale Force 9 did a really, really good job capturing the essence and feel of Firefly, whereas Legendary is just so broad that they're going to have a really, really difficult time. Not saying it's completely impossible, but they're going to have a difficult time capturing the essence of all those properties.
More of a slapped-on theme to make the theme fit the mechanic is what you're worried about in the long run?
Exactly. Yeah, I have not played the game yet, mm-hmm. so I can't speak from first-hand account.
What, you haven't played Legendary?
Right. I haven't played any of them.
I played Legendary once, and we got stomped into the ground. So even the people who I was playing with loved the game, played it all the time, and were like, this is not how the game normally plays.
Don't you love that? Like, you sit down and play something new and it's just like, I just got curb stomped.
Yeah.
And everybody's like, I swear this is not how it works normally.
Well, I think all the characters have their own decks, but you don't play them necessarily. Like, if you're Daredevil and I'm Spider-Man, these are our characters and we like to put those in the game. You can buy Spider-Man cards. I can buy Daredevil cards for my deck. Mm-hmm. Well, I think that the team we put together didn't have a lot of synergy.
Mm-hmm.
And there was just... we couldn't beat anything. We could heal, maybe. Maybe we could spend money. I don't remember what we could do, but it wasn't win fights.
Right.
That's for sure. I actually just thought of another game from Gen Con. Have you heard of the game Codenames?
Yes, I did see Codenames. Yeah, I was very excited about that.
The team game? At first, it wasn't something I was really excited about, but people seem to really, really like it. So yeah. I think I might give it a look.
Well, I'm a big fan of press your luck style games. And of course, you know, the whole deduction theme.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm also, like, having become tired of Cards Against Humanity, Apples to Apples, that kind of party game, I'm interested to see, all right, what else is out there?
Branching out into new
territory.
Uncharted territory as far as party games go.
Yeah. And I'm glad they didn't try to, like, skin a Get Smart or a James Bond sort of theme over the top of it. It's just, it is what it is.
Yeah. You know? I mean, those themes are popping up everywhere.
Yeah.
Well, it's like, I think you and I were talking earlier about Munchkin.
Now, yep.
We even just played a game of Munchkin Pathfinder last week, but at the game store, I'm seeing Gloom Munchkin.
Yeah.
It goes back, it sort of relates to just weird mixtures of properties right now.
Yeah. I mean, just in the Gen Con essays and whatnot that I've been reading,
mm-hmm.
Gloom and Smash Up are all of a sudden, you know, skinned with Munchkin. And, you know, we're seeing versions of Munchkin with, like, Adventure Time and
mm-hmm. Yeah.
Star Munchkin was, I think, one of the first spinoffs of Munchkin on its own. But, like, I'm starting to see Munchkin everywhere. And Munchkin's a fine game, and we had a great time playing it the other night. But I just feel like there's not a solid theme to it that lends itself to all these new rebrandings.
Well, you got to think. I mean, if you were a small publisher or something, you would love the chance to slap your game on a Munchkin box. Steve Jackson, that company, they bring in for the board game industry so much money. Mm. I mean, it is just... if you're Gloom, you're gonna make it happen. And I'm not gonna criticize in Gloom Munchkin because I haven't played it.
Me
and
either.
The only version of Munchkin I have played is actually the Pathfinder Munchkin, and I enjoy it.
Yeah, it's fine.
Yeah, it's not my favorite game, but I never turn it down.
Right. When your wife pulled it off the shelf, I was like, oh yeah, I haven't played Munchkin in a long time. Yeah, that sounds like a good idea.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that was a good game that we played this week. What else have you played lately?
Well, you and I played Tiny Epic Defenders.
Oh yeah.
I mean, that came down to probably one or two card draw, and we yep. pulled off the win. I played some Masquerade.
Oh yeah?
Yeah, that's a decent party game. That plays up to 13, I think, but we were playing with 6 people.
Well, that's not bad.
Have you played Masquerade?
I have not. I've actually missed out on that a couple of times.
I have it, and it gets played quite often. It's super easy to teach. It's another deduction game, character role. Like, you've played Coup.
Mm-hmm, of course.
It's similar. No player elimination in Masquerade. So the first person to get to 13 coins wins. So there's okay. the obvious, there's like the king who gets 3 coins, the queen who gets 2 coins, but there's some interesting cards like the witch who allows you to switch your treasure with the treasure of anybody else at the table. So you can suddenly go from way behind to first place, but you can't win with her.
Hmm.
And then there's a character called the cheat, and if you have him, you can win with only 10 coins. So once people start getting to 10, you'll see it happening where people won't let other people have the cheat. But the cheat also has no way to make money. So if you don't already have the 10 coins, he's kind of useless. So it's interesting. There's a lot going on. There's a whole bunch of characters. I know there's an expansion that I've been told doubles the amount of characters, but I haven't got to play with it yet.
Okay.
How about you? You playing anything?
I... really just variations on things I've already played. The big one that I played this month a lot of was Ticket to Ride, because one of our friends is quite obsessed with Ticket to Ride right now. And with good reason. It's a great game, and there's a lot of different versions of it. I can play it with my students.
Yeah, really easy.
Yeah.
To teach, learn.
Yeah. And it's I mean, it's just a great, you know, little social studies kind of geography activity. And most recently, I played Ticket to Ride Nordic Countries, which, if you know me, is one of my favorite geographical areas of the world, partly because I'm a metalhead and a lot of unique metal bands come from the Finland area. And but more than that, Santa lives there, and I one day I will go visit Santa. So yeah, I really enjoyed being the only one at the table who actually knew the Nordic geography, and I was actually fairly successful for the first time in my Ticket to Ride career.
I found, because I've played a lot of USA Ticket to Ride, and then, oh, I don't know which one. Jessie has it on her iPad. Germany, or I don't, it could, Markland? I don't know. Which one?
Germany is, well, I don't know what it's called on the app, but I know in the tabletop it's called Markland.
It could be anything. But it's strange, because I can see a ticket that says, like, New York to Miami, or San Francisco to Boston, and know immediately what we're, but here I have to look, and I'm pretty much trying to find the places.
Yeah.
Trying to map them out, because I'm not that strong with Northern European geography in all cases.
Right. Well, the other game that I played and did very poorly at was called Roll for the Galaxy.
Mm.
It is a very highly rated game, and I had played the companion game, Race for the Galaxy.
How was that?
It's fun. I really like the different approaches that you can make to the game.
Like multiple routes to victory type thing?
Yeah, I mean, you can explore, you can colonize a planet, you can build something new, and each time you establish a colony or add to your domain, you get a different power.
Hmm.
My problem with Roll for the Galaxy, and it's not a big problem, because I really did enjoy my experience playing the game, it was explained rather poorly to me.
Mm.
I don't know if it was my attention span at the end of the day, or if it was just the approach that the owner of the game took to explaining the game, but I felt about halfway through the game that I still didn't understand some of the core concepts that some of the other players at the table did understand.
Mm.
For example, I knew how to colonize a planet. I knew how to reap the benefits of playing a planet, but I didn't really know anything about gaining victory points or how the game was scored or even how the game ended. I just felt like I was kind of going through the motions. And okay. I think it was kind of how you felt in a way when a couple of months ago when we were playing Lords of Waterdeep. Not that Lords of Waterdeep was explained poorly to you, but just you felt like you were kind of going through the motions
mm-hmm,
with it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I really wanted to investigate what are some of the best practices for when you're explaining a game and or even just demonstrating or just reading the rules of a game. What's your normal approach?
For me?
Yeah.
Oh, actually, I just got and learned and taught a new game a couple weeks ago. One everybody knows, Terra Mystica. I had never played it. And well, what I do is when I get a game, I tend to teach more games than I learn.
Mm-hmm.
Especially, you know, we've discussed up front, like, I got a lot of our friends into gaming, and then sort of we branched out and all these different pockets of people sort of came together. But for a while, I was like never learning a game that I wasn't teaching. So I kind of, what I do is I'll go through, read the rules once or twice before. Some games I have actually demoed on my own,
mm-hmm.
you know, just to get a playthrough to make sure I understand the rules. And then I actually come up with a kind of, it's a plan. It's like a roadmap. Like, I'll play a little demo or I'll read through the rules and then I'll sort of mock teach someone.
Do you take notes or anything, or do you just
Notes? I have taken notes once or twice. Usually I can either keep the rules right by me and then sort of take a quick glance and go explain what I need to explain. Other times with more complicated games, I will actually go on BoardGameGeek and look for teaching guides.
Okay.
Which a lot of people will type up, or just rule summaries, which I think are the most helpful thing. And I wish every game of any complexity would just insert a card or a sheet of paper or something. Just here's the basic core walkthrough. And a lot of games do. They put that on the back of the rules, wherever.
Just like the sheets. The basic turn structure?
Yeah, just basic turn structure. Because a lot of time, once I've read the rules once, twice through, and I've played a game, real or demo, most of the time, that basic turn structure is all I really need. It's kind of an outline, and then I can just recall And if there's tiny little details, sometimes I'll open the rule book and crack it open and see what's going on. But usually, especially with a game I've played once or twice, that outline is all I need. Yeah. So I'll do like a mock and I'll kind of try and figure out what is it people need to know, that sort of thing. I like to start with what's the object of the game. In this game, we're collecting victory points. In this game, you're trying to eliminate the opponent. In this game, you're trying to do XYZ.
Yeah, I think with Roll for the Galaxy, it was explained to me that the victory points were a thing, but I didn't see anybody like aggressively picking them up. Or, you know, going out of their way to pick any up until about halfway through the game. And then I started asking questions. I'm like, am I doing something wrong that I'm not, you know, picking these up? And the guy who owned the game was like, no, you're fine. You're playing a different strategy than everybody else. And I was like,
not so much.
I'm not playing a strategy. I'm just kind of doing something. I'm doing what I know. And so he did take time at that point to reiterate, I guess, but I had never heard him say it in the first place, some of the different moves you can make. And then I started to see a strategy sort of. It was very blurry, though, in my mind's eye. And I think the problem is he got bogged down. He was kind of wasting time with some of the minutiae.
Right.
Of the game and not really explaining the full essence. And I know I'm guilty of that as well. One of the first games that I ever explained to somebody else was it was an older game, and I got very bogged down in the lore behind it. And there's a number of moves you can make in the game that don't really come up, but I ended up explaining those more than I did the actions that do come up. So how do you deal with instruction that's somewhat scatterbrained or disjointed?
Because I know what I'm trying to teach. I try my best to avoid that. It's not always easy, because it's like pieces of a puzzle that if you have a couple of the pieces, you don't see the big picture. So I try to, just logically, if I was learning, when this is sort of going back to that mock thing, what would I want to know right up front? I want to know I have to eliminate your army. Okay, so how do I do that? Then I try and it's like, what are the other things you can do? And then I'll just go through, explain step by step. I like to not play a game with a group until I've either run a demo game or, like, Jesse and I have played a quick just to sort of see how the rules work together.
Right.
You know what I mean? And then, which is an interesting thing, is that I don't like to teach a game unless I've played a game, even if it's new, which can be complicated. But I just find that once you've seen and you have a clear picture of how everything works together, I think it's easier to spot what is or was or will be important to you as a new player. And then you can focus on that and then, you know, fill in the details later. But so really, to answer your question, when people... I've never played the game Seven Wonders by Antoine Bauza, and somebody tried to teach it to me once, and it was clear that he wasn't really good at teaching. So he put a bunch of stuff out and goes, okay, you can do this thing. But I'm like, okay, what's the object of the game, first and foremost? So really, yeah. I ask questions. It might even get annoying, but I'm not looking for every little detail. But I think I've played enough games where if it's clear we have A and we have C and I can't figure out what B is, how to get from A to C, I'll straight up ask.
Yeah, I think... and A lot of the people we play with are very passionate about the games that they like. Last month we talked about Twilight Imperium, and I was watching one of our friends teach Twilight Imperium this past weekend, and I was playing Roll for the Galaxy at the time, so I was just sort of watching over the corner of my eye, or out of the corner of my eye, and I noticed that the store owner was pretty much ready to flip the table because something was not explained to him in the order that it should have been, and he honestly wanted to roll back his entire turn because he assumed that something was one way and wasn't. Now, unfortunately, I wasn't playing in the game, as I said, I don't know the exact specifics of the situation, and I wish I did, because I'm sure that would be a great teaching moment. However, I will say I've played a number of games with some friends of mine from Boston, the twins, and they are literally all over the place.
See, that is really hard from my perspective. I can't, like, it doesn't have to all make sense at once.
No,
but
not at
there
all.
Needs to at least be some sort of progression in that part.
Yeah.
You know, it can't be, this is how you recharge your energy, this is how you move, you're going to draw two cards, and these are all like, whoa, take it easy. There's got to be some sort of order.
At that point, I feel like they're almost walking me through it, you know, holding my hand, where, I mean, in order to learn something, you have to be able to do it on your own. You have to make your own decisions in the game.
There are a lot of people, like, for example, I just played Castles of Mad King Ludwig for the first time, and we were going through the rules, and one of the players who had never played before said, oh, I'm a learner as I doer, you know what I mean?
Like, so he was,
like,
learning as he went?
Well, listening to the rules, but not absorbing them fully until they can see them in action.
Okay, I definitely see some of that in myself as well.
Yeah, I think, well, for a board game, it's the same reason I demo it. I can tell you all these million things, but when you see how they interact and how the, you know, the cogs in the machine really turn, it's kind of a different thing. But I think a lot of it is patience. I know,
oh, absolutely.
Well, it's interesting because you're talking about somebody who misunderstood a rule or wasn't explained a rule clearly. And I know as a teacher, I've been on the side of things where I am trying to explain a game thoroughly, and in this case it actually was City of Remnants. Have you played that game yet?
I've not played that one yet.
Okay, it is one of my favorite games, but it is a gamer's game, very technical, and it is one of the least forgiving games I've ever played. If you get behind early, it can be very difficult to catch up. Well, it's also got an interesting mechanic. You have a handful of cards and you're playing them, but when they run out, it actually requires an action to shuffle and get your cards back.
Huh.
Until the end of the round. But I'm trying to teach combat because you can use the cards as bonuses for your combat. And instead of listening to the rules, people are like, oh, we'll figure things out as we go.
Yeah, see, I don't like that approach.
Yeah, I'm like, it's really complicated in this game. And they're like, oh, we'll figure it out. I've played games before. And then they get into the game, they attack somebody, they run out of cards mid-fight, and then just get stomped. And now they're upset because I didn't tell them this very technical thing, but I tried. You know what I mean? So you gotta, I think, on both sides, both from a learning and a teaching, you really need a lot of patience when you're trying to learn or teach a new game.
Absolutely. And I think that's a really common pitfall too, especially when you're learning like a solo play variant. Like, I don't know how much experience you have with playing a game just on your own.
I think the only game I've ever done that with was Dungeon Twister Prison. Well, no. I've played, yes, a solo variant. That's the only game I've done that with.
Okay. I mean, they're becoming increasingly popular, especially with games that have been kickstarted. You know, they can just throw it on as a stretch goal and have someone sit on their own and fart around with the pieces and trying to develop a solo play variant.
Yeah.
And I think it's really hard to break yourself out of the, oh, I'll just kind of get there when I get there, and really take some time with the rules and just, I mean, understand what you're doing. I've had experiences where while it's being explained to me, I'll sit with a copy of the rulebook, whether it's the actual physical copy or a PDF on my phone or something like that, and just reference what's being told to me at the time it's being told. I did that when we learned Blood Bowl for the first time, and it really helped me significantly to understand the different actions that are available for the different players. The one thing that comes up a lot that I think a lot of people struggle with, though, is how to handle misinterpretation. And I think there's a number of different ways you can do it. You can take the what I call the Warhammer model, which is the sort of, as you go, you just sort of agree on something that progresses the game. Mm-hmm. And then there's also like the debate model, where the group will sort of sit there and discuss their interpretations of the rule and then try and, you know, go out on the internet and find some research or like really find what is actually the correct solution. And I think both ways you can run into problems.
And that, I think it goes back to like the patience thing. Hey, I don't have a problem, especially if it's a new game for everybody, if the teacher of it thinks they know the game and is like, hold on, let me clarify and pull out the rule book real quick.
Mm-hmm.
But I think one of the things, and this goes, I mean, this is another patience thing, is that especially your first time through a complicated game, there's going to be mistakes. Treat it as a learning game.
Mistakes were made.
Yeah, it's like, Well, first time we played Game of Thrones, there's certain tokens you put face down. The board game, not the card game. And you can't put, I think, crown tokens in the water.
Right.
That you control. But you can put them in the harbor.
Which is very confusing.
Right. So that's a mistake we made. And somebody was like, I remember playing that game. And then that rule got pointed out. And they were like, oh, I could have had X more resources mm-hmm. if I had known that. Because I kind of wasted a crown here or there. I mean, it wasn't like a game breaker or changer, but they didn't really get upset. It's a huge game. I mean, we're 3 hours into a game. Losing your mind over something that small over a game is just, you gotta chill out.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, misinterpretation can happen the first time you play a game, or like the 10 billionth time.
Mm-hmm.
We were playing Munchkin, like we said earlier, the other day, and we misinterpreted a win condition that probably would have been a game changer.
Yeah, no, I absolutely would have. Because I ended up winning, right? Because Jesse told us you couldn't buy the 10th level.
Which is the end game.
Which is the end game. But while that's true, you also can't use a level up card.
Right.
You can use some cards if it allows you, but you can't. Well, that's what happened. I ended up getting lucky, getting level up cards.
Yeah, you killed a monster with 4 treasure.
Mm-hmm.
I helped out, so, and I said I would like to take one of those treasures. There three of them were level up cards, so yeah. I picked one, went to level 9. You picked 2, I believe.
Yeah.
And went to level 9 and then to level 10. Technically, you're not supposed to be able to do that.
Right, because you have to win, unless a card says otherwise. You need a solid monster victory to win.
And I think we definitely solved that issue using the Warhammer model, because we were all perfectly fine with the game ending there. It didn't harm the gameplay experience at all.
Right. And yeah, We were like, oh, that was fun. It was kind of a lucky come-from-behind.
Yeah, lucky little top win. Deck. No big deal. It happens. It's variance. That's the key concept in Munchkin that makes it fun and different every time you play it.
But it is interesting, though. Like, you do see people react very poorly to... I remember... I should bring this up. We were at PAX East, and a bunch of people were demoing Sentinel Tactics.
Flame My favorite game.
And at the end of it was like Sunday. It was like the last hour or two. Everything was kind of winding down, and these guys sat at the table and they were showing them, you know, some of the demo people explained the rules to them. We'll try to. And then they're like, oh, we'll just play around. They weren't keeping score. They weren't kicking people off the table because there wasn't anybody around in the last hour of the event.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? So it was just a kind of get to learn the mechanics, have a little bit of fun. Well, a guy went to use his tokens at an inappropriate time.
You mean his attack enhancement?
Attack and defense. I think it was a defense token.
Okay.
Like, because you have to use it, and then you roll the extra die or something.
Right.
Well, he wanted to use it at the end to do whatever, and they explained the rules to him. And this is a game with no score that does not matter. And he threw a 40-year-old man, 4-year-old temper tantrum in the middle of Boston in PAX. Like, he threw his chips down. He was like, you didn't tell me that, this one. And it was... A, yes, they did. B, who cares? It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
It's just to learn the mechanics. It's just, now you know the rule. You didn't before. Congratulations, you learned something. Move on.
Yeah, I feel like you're always going to get those kinds of people. And I think your point earlier on that you just have to be patient and accept when something is not as you expect it to be.
And and a lot of that goes to the game group, too. Like, personally, if I'm playing with somebody who is going to throw a temper tantrum when over something insignificant like that, that probably won't be somebody I play a lot of games with.
Right. Yeah, I don't think I would be very likely to play a game with that type of person again. And the problem is, like, when you host a tournament, for example, you don't have a choice.
No, you're stuck. And that's true.
I think that's probably a topic for another episode.
What tournament play and
tournament stuck. Play and the sort of people who show up. So I think that's pretty good for this month. And I really hope we were able to offer some insight next time you're either teaching or learning a game. Bottom line, just be patient. For now, if you want to check out older episodes of the podcast or some of our other work, head on over to anotherletdown.com. Huge thanks to our editor, Jody Wagner. This is our fourth episode, and we would not be here without her. Thank you so much, Jody. We really appreciate
you, Jody.
It. If you have any feedback for us, you can reach us on Twitter. My name is at DENONCZD, and Doug is at ITSOKTOLAFF. If you have something a bit longer, maybe to send to us, a couple paragraphs or whatever, more than 140 characters, feel free to send us an email at jasonhex@anotherletdown.com. From all of us here at Another Letdown, happy gaming, and we'll talk to you next month.
Let's do that again, actually, because I forgot why we were doing it.